Welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Kayla, and I'm here with my co-host,
Noah.
And we're also here with our friend,
Joe.
Wow.
We usually don't introduce people this early. I think I like it. You know, now everyone is on the same page. If they didn't read the title, then they're on the same page. But if they did, then they're just waiting.
Yeah,
this is our first triple feature since November, I think, was the last one.
It's the first triple feature of 2022.
Wow. You're so right. So true. These are fun. They're sometimes like hard to schedule, so we don't get to do a ton of them, but we try to do at least two a year, I think, is like our goal. And this one is going to be pretty cool. It's going to be a pretty cool time. Joe, do you want to like just give a quick introduction to yourself? We'll get more into everything after. But, you know, we don't want you just like talking people like, who's this guy? You want to just introduce yourself?
Yeah, I am a documentary filmmaker. I make short little documentaries and then also do a little bit of branded work. And that's, I guess, my main thing right now is making videos for small businesses and local organizations in the Minnesota area. So, yeah.
Wow.
Very cool. I've seen a few. You have a lot of them on your YouTube channel, right? So they're available for all to watch. So, you know, maybe you go pause this, go watch those, and then come back and have more context. Yeah, I really liked you did the record store one.
And that one was really cool because I like record stores. So
it was cool to see that. It was really fun.
Yeah, they're really nice. Maybe I'll plug this at the end. I don't know. I'm like the most recent thing that I did like 2 days ago. The person told me like I got to the shoot and I pitched it as like, okay, this is like a student project because I'm in the middle of like community college for film. And he was like, these don't seem like they were made by a student. And I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. And so that is going to be what I'm running on for the next, like, I think 4 or 5 weeks. So
sounds about right. That's how it goes. You get one piece of validation, carries you through, and then you die at the end of the day. But before we get into all of the fun triple feature stuff, we do have to get into our answers. We got to last week's question of the week, which was, what is your favorite road trip movie? And people took this a lot of different ways, a lot of varied answers here.
Yeah, many I didn't even think about.
Yeah, what are some of your favorites that we got?
Well, of course, we got Little Miss Sunshine from both our friend Zachary Smith Michaels and from our friend Bryce. So that seems to be usually, I think, a lot of people's go-to like road trip movie, which I enjoy that movie. So
yeah, and Paul Dano's like making a film Twitter comeback right now. So,
oh my gosh, what a guy!
You know, I'm sure there will be people on TikTok like in a couple months, like saying, you know, like those videos where it's like movies you have to watch that no one's ever heard of, and it's like Little Miss Sunshine will be one of those, and it's like, oh my word, all right.
If I still had short hair, I could cosplay as Paul Dano. Not even just him as the Riddler, like just Paul Dano himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you could do the Riddler now. You could just put a big thing on your head.
I've got the clear glasses, so I can do it.
Yeah. Dan came with two, you know, because he wanted to cover two genres, which I respect. Comedy, he said Dumb and Dumber. And then in drama, he said... my Spanish is so bad. Do you want to say this? Because, like, I know how to say it, but I'm just not a good... I'm just don't want to butcher it. I really don't.
It's what? E2 Mama Tambien?
Yeah, I think so, yes. Yeah, my Spanish is so bad. This is a great movie, though.
I
really
took
do
French
like this. Have
in
you seen
high
this?
School, so...
Wow. I actually did take Spanish.
I did not take Spanish.
I didn't do very well.
I have not seen this, actually.
Oh, wow. I think you would like this.
Yeah, I've thought that I would too, but it feels like everything I've heard about it, that it feels like a more deep film or like a heavier film. I don't know. So I just haven't ever.
Definitely. Yeah. I would definitely not recommend watching it when you're depressed.
I'll probably never
watch
it.
So never watch it. Yeah. You don't have to ever watch it if you don't want to.
That's a good list right there. Movies to not watch when you're depressed.
So movies and you'll never watch.
And then you have an asterisk and then the description is like, I will never watch any of these.
Just hold off on these until your therapist says it's okay.
Yeah. They're like the little achievements you unlock in therapy. Like, you have reached the level where you can watch this now. We always get an answer from Joe from these. So do you want to read your answer? Because you're here. You can just read it.
Yeah, so... some like jackass answered A Life Less Ordinary. What is that? Oh, I'll tell you what it is. It's about oh crap, what's the guy's, Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz are both kind of stuck in their lives, and he kidnaps her, but she doesn't really, she's not like upset about the fact that she's kidnapped. It's a lot like, it's basically like a modern version of The Fantastics, if you've ever seen that.
Very cool. You know, I would be kidnapped by Ewan McGregor gladly. So.
Oh my God. We all would.
I think I'm right in that boat with her. So it's all good. One interesting one that I don't know if like I expected, but it definitely kind of is a road trip movie, is Fellowship of the Ring, which is a pretty cool, pretty cool answer. Because I think it's really the only one that is, because after that one, then they kind of split up, and it's like, I mean, maybe Sam and Frodo are always on like their own road trip, I guess, but
yeah,
the others are just like,
I can't believe we haven't ever done, that is an episode we've talked about for a long time, doing a Lord of the Rings trilogy episode, and it just feels so daunting that it has never happened, but maybe this year, maybe next year.
I feel like we need to do, like, because we do the summer series where, like, one every month. I feel like it needs to be one of those. Like,
yeah.
One, because I don't know if we could cover all three in one episode.
We used to watch all three in one day. Like, we would Lord of the Rings marathon and extended edition and watch.
That doesn't sound very fun.
All three, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds kind of grueling.
Yeah. Well, when you're kids and you love Lord of the Rings, like, what else are you going to do?
What other answers do we have here? We have a couple more.
Mike said A Goofy Movie, which I agree. Fun. That is a great road trip movie.
Yes, it is. It is goofy, and it is a movie, and I don't know what else you need. Is that the one where like a son goes to college, right?
No.
Or no? Never mind.
I've never seen it, but I do know
he wants to go to this concert, or they're going to the concert, but he wants to take him on a camping trip, and so he's trying to take Max on this camping trip, but Max is like being sneaky and is going to go to the concert instead, and so it's their like bonding. It's very sweet, and a very like dad son classic little movie. It's very cute.
Do you want to know something vaguely interesting about that? So the not even waiting for an answer. So anyway, the two songs that are like really like up there in that movie that are really good, called Stand Out and Eye to Eye, were actually recorded in Prince's home studio, Paisley Park. And it was all produced by Prince's producer. However, it was sung by this other guy who nobody really knew of at the time.
Wow.
Wow.
That's really cool.
That's pretty cool to be in Prince's studio, but you're not Prince. You're like...
He was like one of his proteges. Apparently, Prince had a couple people who he would like train, I guess.
Well,
I don't really know.
Janelle Monáe was definitely one of those,
she?
I'm pretty sure. I know like, at least maybe she got big and then she was, but like they definitely worked really closely together. What you can tell if you listen to her music is like basically just Prince music. Yeah, she's great. Love some good road trip movies. They're fun.
God Jester Steven said The Blues Brothers, which I have not seen.
Never seen it. Yeah.
I don't even know what it's about.
Well, it's about brothers, probably, I would assume.
Yeah, it's about a pair of guys, Jim Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, and they go on a crazy road trip while Carrie Fisher tries to kill one of them.
Oh.
Wow.
As you do. Yes. All great road trips.
If you've ever seen the Phineas Ferb episode where they're trying to get the band back together, that's a parody of the Blues Brothers, and it's very similar.
Good to know.
I haven't seen that either, but you know, I'm sure people listening have. So there you go.
So, Joe now it is time for our interrogation of you.
All right.
Just kidding. So you already kind of shared a little bit about what you do. So you're a filmmaker. What kind of got you into like film in the first place?
I always just kind of liked doing it. My older sister always had like a camera around. And so like there's a bunch of old home videos of me doing things with like my family or just like in the woods. Then in sixth grade, I entered this thing called the Adam Young Film Scores Contest.
Oh, I remembered that. Wow. That is wild. That is a wild throwback. Damn.
Yeah. So, really? All right. So if you don't know who Adam Young is, he's also known as Owl City, as the cultured among
you.
We
were big Owl City kids.
Yes. Very, very big.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Love that. I always have a copy of The Midsummer Station in my car. Anyway, so me and my cousin and my friend Brandon made like a little entry into it. And it wasn't that good, but like the experience of making it was just so satisfying. And I wanted to keep doing it. And then like I kept on doing like more fiction films for a while. And then eventually I kind of started doing more like paid work. Like people would be like, hey, kid, you've got a camera. I'll pay you $50 to do this thing or this thing. And it just kept on like snowballing from there.
Wow. So yeah, that's pretty much how it always works. You know, you just kind of fall into it. Yeah, it's interesting too. It started with film scores. So it's like it started kind of in a different medium and then it transitioned. I mean, because I think film scores, and especially like those Adam Young film scores that he did for that 1 year when like he did one a month, were like very narrative based anyway. So it makes sense that like that would be a connection there because he was going for that narrative based score idea.
I mean, it just, even listening to him now, you're like, wow, this feels like an experienced like James Newton Howard type of guy. Like this is like really something. Like it doesn't sound like a pop artist, like somebody known, especially for doing electronic music, to like just switch completely.
Yeah, I stopped listening. I think I listened to like the first four and then I kind of fell off. Owl City episode.
Deep cut. Yeah.
This is a really deep cut. Wow. Yeah, that's cool though. Do you remember, we like to ask this to like all of our guests because it's like an interesting question. Do you remember like the first movie that you ever watched in a theater?
No, I do not. But I do, my oldest memory of watching a movie was watching Star Wars 4 on a VHS and constantly like giggling when I would like rewind the VHS because it was just so funny to me seeing it like a little bit faster. And there's like the two things at the top and the bottom of the screen where it's like it's like there's like lines. So that was like that, like when I think back of like my history of watching movies, that's like the oldest memory I can think of like movie with a capital M.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We had the Star Wars VHSs.
Love those VHS memories.
Oh, yeah.
VHS episode. Because you collect VHSs. So we both have VHS memories. VHSs are really interesting.
Cool. So obviously here you put together a triple feature. But for you, what kind of makes a movie that you like? So when you watch a movie and you see it and you're like, wow, this is a great film. What makes that great for you?
If it can make me cry and laugh in the same sitting, that really does it for me. My all-time favorite is Four Weddings and a Funeral. And I feel like that's the thing I always point to because it's just so, like, devastating and hysterical. Like, a good movie is funny and sad, but a great movie is devastating and hysterical.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I like that movie. That's a fun movie. Yeah. I haven't seen it in a bit, so maybe I should rewatch it. Hugh Grant is very funny.
I have multiple books. This isn't a spoiler. There's a poem in it by a guy named Odin, like A-U-D-E-N. And I have multiple books of poetry just because I saw that movie and I was like, this is so good.
That's funny. Got you into a poetry phase.
I do that too.
All right, cool. So let's go to an ad break. And then when we come back, we will jump into our triple feature. Thank you.
we're back.
All right, so this is our triple feature section of the episode, and if anyone hasn't listened to one of these episodes before, basically what it is
we have a guest on, and they bring three movies, the triple feature.
And we talk about them one by one in the set order that they provide. And sometimes there's like a theme, sometimes it's a trilogy, sometimes it's just like their three favorite movies. But this one in particular does have a theme. And so do you want to like introduce what the theme is that you chose for this triple feature?
Yeah, it's breaking the fourth wall anytime a character addresses the audience or the camera.
Yeah, and we're not talking about Ferris Bueller, so we're going for the deep cuts, because that's the one everyone always brings up.
Or, what's-its-face? Oh, yeah. Freaking Annie Hall. Is that the one that...
Oh, yeah.
The Woody Allen movie?
But basically...
Never seen
please
it.
Please don't see it.
It's bad, but, like, no, it was one of the first
that
one ones.
That one is pretty good, but,
like,
yeah,
the
right.
amount
it's like
of,
a lot of Woody
times
Allen
I heard I saw that stupid scene in, like, film school or whatever. I think it was
the opening scene
from that movie where he, like, turns to the camera.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that one has a lot, and then Manhattan has some. Manhattan is the one that's really bad. If you're going to see any, I would watch Annie Hall. Manhattan is terrible.
Well, at this point, I would never selectively watch a Woody Allen movie for any reason.
Yeah, it's they're very annoying, too, so it's not like they're really even worth watching. Yeah, we're not talking about Annie Hall, though, so...
Do you want to introduce what the first film is, Joe?
Yeah, I'd love to. We're starting with I, Tonya from 2017.
Wow.
These movies all have abusive men in them, so the characters at least.
Yeah.
What does that say about you, Joe?
I don't know. One can't change what they like.
What does that say about the fourth wall? You know, maybe it's people beckoning to the audience to save them. I don't know. We're already getting deep here. We have a synopsis here that you wrote, Kayla.
I did, yes. I mean, like, how do you write a synopsis about this movie? Like, everybody knows what happened, so I basically was just, like, writing what happened,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I'll read it then. I'll go through. I'll take us through this journey of I, Tonya, quick. Tonya Harding figure skated her whole life. She skated her way into a national championship, a world medal, and the U.S. Olympic team not once, but twice. She was the first American figure skater to complete a triple axel. Then, when Nancy Kerrigan's knee is bashed in, Tonya gets wrapped up in the aftermath because of her ex-husband Jeff's involvement. Wow, I didn't have one mistake that whole time. That was pretty good.
That may be the best anyone has ever read a synopsis.
Thank you. Thank you.
What a story that no one knew before this.
Yeah, so me and Kayla both watched this for the first time this week. But when was the first time like you watched this movie?
There's another podcast called Punch Up the Jam where they talk about music. And in one of the hosts, Demi Adejuyibe, loves I, Tonya, and he talks about it a lot. And I was like, okay, I gotta watch this movie, I guess. Then... I think it was this past fall.
Yeah, this is what made me watch it. But I think his like love of the movie also like made me want to watch it more, I guess, because it's like I always wanted to see it since it came out, because it was like a big awards movie, and I've always been interested in Tonya Harding's story. I think it's very interesting. I think it's actually interesting maybe sometimes in ways that this movie doesn't address, but I always thought it was interesting. So I wanted to watch it since then, but then like he has a few reviews on Letterboxd of it where it's like just praising it in so many different aspects of it. So that definitely made me more interested to watch it. So I was glad when you picked it, because wanting to watch it for a while. And this gives, I feel like with a podcast, that's like just the secret reason we started it. It just gives us reasons to watch things that like we never give ourselves permission to watch. So, you know, that is what this was a little bit for me.
Yeah, I have to admit, I had not seen this movie, but I had seen many of the Sebastian Stan scenes from either like YouTube compilations or like fan cams. So it was nice to have them in context of the film.
Did it ruin the fan cams though?
No.
Okay. I mean, I gotta say, there are great fits in here. He bashes the mustache in the beginning, but I think the mustache really works, I gotta say.
Yeah, I think he can pull
definitely.
It off. Definitely. I think he could pull off whatever he wanted to.
Oh, was that a double entendre? Because that's
it was
pretty good.
Yeah. So why did you pick this one? I mean, obviously we're talking about fourth wall breaks, but what like draws you, I guess, to this movie?
I guess it's that they have both kinds of fourth wall breaks. They've got the kind where it's the talking head, like two camera, unbroken. And then there's the other kind where, like at one point, Tanya pumps a shotgun and she looks at the camera and says, this never happened. At another time, her trainer looks right into the camera and says, this actually happened. And she actually did this too. And those two kinds where it's like the talking head and the breaking the fourth wall, like while they're in it, is very similar to another one of the movies that we're going to talk about in this episode. So
yeah, definitely out of all of the three, this is the one that I thought used it the most. And it's really interesting how many different ways they use it. Cause like you said, they do have the interview aspect, which is a thing I think feel like a lot of movies are kind of trying. Cause there was, well, the terrible movie, Being the Ricardos, that one did it. That was bad. But like the fake documentary kind of thing, which is just, it's an interesting thing that that people are kind of playing with. So it has those elements. But like then you said, it also has the more classic fourth wall breaks where the character turns to the camera and addresses the audience like directly. I think the best use of it is when she
talks to the audience and is like, you are all my abusers, which was like a really interesting
idea, because that is like kind of the story around her, similar to like a Tammy Faye kind of character, where the media kind of just uses her as like a punching bag for their comedy and their just what they want to talk about and get in the news. So yeah, that was probably what struck me most, is that one moment. But I did think it was interesting how many different times they used it and how they used it all throughout the movie.
It's really heavy. When I love that moment.
It's too. Definitely like my favorite part of the movie, because that's what I'm most interested in, is like the public's response in reaction to her and how that affected her, and also how that kind of comments on like the cycle that a lot of the media seems to go through with women and victimizing them.
Yeah.
No, it's a lot like you ever seen Chicago?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. Well, they have this part where one of the women says to the other one, like I was famous for a day. And then the other one says something like, that's Chicago, baby. And I always think about that, because it's like, it's so like, we're only going to help you out to the point where it will help us out. And then even at that, once we're done with you, we're going to throw you away.
Well, it's like they end it with showing the O.J. Simpson thing starting, where it's like, that's going to be the next big thing. And it's not like all this, even though it ruined her life, is like behind the media. Like the media doesn't care anymore. It just like drop kicks the woman into whatever their new existence is.
Yeah, definitely. And like they do mention like offhand where it's like this was the beginning of the 24-hour news cycle, like they needed to fill that space. And so it's interesting, I think, to look at when 24-hour news started to become more popular, and then also compare that to like what public figures were coming out of that time and what was being covered and how many different people were just kind of getting thrown through the news cycle and then like thrown out. And she was one of like the earlier ones, which I mean, and for good reason, because I think like her story is very interesting. And that's why I think that she has so many like documentaries, and like I've heard podcast series about her, and now watch this movie.
There's the Sufjan song.
The Sufjan song. I listened to it after I watched this because, like, man, I forgot about that song. It's a good song. No, but I do think he wrote those songs for this movie because, like, he heard the movie was being written, and he wrote them and, like, sent them to them, but they didn't like them, and she didn't like them. So they did not use them, which is a bummer. But imagine Sufjan Stevens writes a song about you, and you're just like, no, I don't like it. This is not...
What a crazy mindset to be like, there's a movie coming out soon. I guess I'll write the original music for it. And then, like, without consulting anyone. And then they're just like, yeah, we didn't ask you to do this, bud. But that, thank you,
though. Like, just walks into the record label just like, guys, I wrote some music for your movie if you want it. No pressure. Kayla, what was your thoughts on this movie? Because your review is interesting, so...
What was my
review? It wasn't interesting. I just said that.
Oh, I didn't make a review. Because I was like, I'm pretty sure I did not write a review.
That's why I'm interested, because you didn't make a review,
no,
didn't see anything.
The reason I did not write a review was because I realized when I was going to bed last night that I would not have time today to watch it. And then I was like, oh, crap, it's like 11:30 at night. I need to watch this movie. And so I finished it at like 2 a.m. maybe. Yeah, it, you know, it is what it is.
What it is.
I didn't write a review. But like, it was enough to keep me awake,
yeah,
to watch
that's
it.
That's always a good sign.
So I feel like it was engaging enough. Yeah, I find stories like this really interesting because it almost is like, I don't know, it feels kin to like true crime, but like without the crime, like that, like where it's like, you know, a serial killer or something. Like, it's just a whack job dude who was, you know, abusive and manipulative and trying to do something to, like, win her back. And stuff like that is so interesting. I'm into all the, like, conspiracies where it's like, who knew what and what actually happened and what was said behind closed doors and blah, 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 blah. So I find all that really interesting. And I think with something like this, obviously you have to take a certain liberty of storytelling, and I appreciated that they, I think the fourth wall breaks helped with this, but to make it not so serious but also serious, so they were able to do kind of, I don't know, funnier, more unique, creative things that sort of make it the indie film that it was, or like very representative of 2017 when this came out.
Yes.
It feels very like that phase of independent movies. So I really appreciated that because I feel like it makes, not that this story is necessarily fun, but it makes it kind of more presentable in a more palatable way when you're watching it to engage yourself with it. So I liked that.
And I also think it represents like her personality better too than like if this was like a standard biopic. I don't know. Like it is a little bit more abrasive, a little bit more like in your face, and I think that represents like her skating style and what she wanted to represent for the skating world and what she still does. And so I think like that, like obviously I think was an intentional choice too, to like match who the subject was even about and make the movie's tone
fit that rather than trying to
make like a very serious biopic about someone who's like, I don't know, I don't think it would have worked if it was in that style.
Yeah, and I appreciate that they didn't make her I don't know, that they made her kind of hard and they made her like scrappy. So it wasn't like they were trying to present this angel like image of her. Like, obviously when you watch it, you're going to side with her. But it's still like, she is a hard and abrasive character. And in certain situations, you know, it's like, maybe I wouldn't support her doing this or this kind of step she made or took. So I appreciate that they didn't just like
make her perfect.
Yeah, make her a perfect character, that they showed you kind of some of her flaws.
Yeah.
And her, just her more harsh personality and loud personality in this kind of, I guess, nice, pristine figure skating world.
Yeah, no, it's on a, it's like the coolest part of it is like you were talking about true crime a little bit, like that is like such a landmine of ethical nightmares, especially like in a world where like every day, like more like mortifying, like true crime stuff comes out on like Netflix and Hulu and what have you. And for them to be like, we're going to touch this story that happened like 20 years ago, or well, no, yeah,
30 years ago,
the 80s,
at this
not
point.
20 years ago.
Cause it's like,
I'm doing that old thing. Yeah, I just pulled out the millennial time warp on you. But what I'm saying is, like, they really, like, got really bold with it. And I think that's really impressive.
Definitely.
They were going to tell that story even though it's, like, not what people want to hear. It's not convenient. It's not, it's, like, perfectly devastating. And that's, yeah, that's
yeah,
really
definitely.
Cool.
I do think, I don't know if this is because I already know so much about the story, like, going into this. The parts about the Nancy Kerrigan attack to me were the least interesting. Like, I do think that, like, they were done well, but I am much more interested in her than I am in what is still an amazing Paul Walter Hauser performance. Like, his performance is really funny.
Amazing. Love him.
But I definitely was much more into how she was impacted by everything. And I think, like, especially her relationship with her mother was, like, a really great addition. That if that wasn't in here, I think it would be, the movie wouldn't really work, because I think that works to make you care about her on a different level. Because I think you're always going to care about her on the level where, like, she was basically, like, her livelihood was taken away by these guys, you know, and that's going to have that. But I think the mother makes you care about her on a more human and, like, emotional level as well. Because even if you don't, like, have that exact relationship with your own parent, I think that's something that's, like, more can be universal, is, like, the feeling to want to be accepted and just, like, validated, which we already kind of talked about validation. So
yeah, you know, it helps that they cast McKenna Grace as her younger self.
Yes, that was a great casting choice.
She can sell anything. Mm-hmm. Like, anything I see her in, I'm just like, she's the standout performance. And, like, her being a sad child and screaming about her dad leaving,
oh,
I just
that
was like,
so sad.
Oh my gosh, this little baby. Oh, you just want the world for her. And then, like, you see her succeeding and you're like, I don't know. It just is really sad because, you know, you do see she's having this massive success despite where she came from and, like, how difficult that life is in the figure skating world and how so much of it is about image. And you get a small taste of that. But just the fact that something that was completely out of her hands just destroyed her, that from the choices that other people made.
Right, yeah.
It's very sad.
And the dialogue, too. Like, there's a part where her dad and her are shooting rabbits, and her dad says, like, she says, "Do you love my mom?" And he says, "Well, do you love her?" And she says something like, "Yeah." And he says, like, "But not the same way you love me." And that is, like, it's just so perfect because, like, it's such a accurate representation of that. Because even if, like, you have the best parent in the world or the worst parent in the world, you're not going to feel all the way one direction about them. You're going to have some mixed feelings no matter what. And obviously, I mean, I don't think I'm the right person to be making those, you know, perspective calls. But, like, for the most part, that has been most of my friends' experience about that.
Yeah, and I think with the mother, it's like, even though she loves skating, being able to see her from, like, being born to the end of the story shows how, like, she really never, until now, I guess, like, was able to have any control over her life, you know? Because, like, her mother basically made her skate when she was, like, just able to walk, and then... Yeah, I mean, it's just really interesting, like, how all the characters around her, even though she is, like, very passionate and determined, she is a very passive character in her own story, which I think is intentional, until the ending where she takes a more active role over her life, which, yeah. So I think that definitely having that perspective of her childhood is really helpful, because most of the story just starts... Most documentaries and stuff just start, like, when she was 16 or 17 or whatever.
Plus, we all know the other stuff, too.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah.
We all know the Nancy Kerrigan story. We all know it. So seeing the things that we never saw prior to it is what's the most...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, she's really interesting. And I always think it's also interesting when people make biopics like this when people are still alive, and, like, how that affects... Because I do think, like you said, it is
pretty, like, they do give her flaws, but it's just interesting to think, like, what would this have been if it was made in, like, 20 years, I guess.
I mean, obviously it's going to be different, but just, like, thinking about how the perspective will be of someone once they're actually, like, not here anymore. It's just, yeah, you never know. Never know. Anything else on this one before we move on to option number two, which is a full-on heist style time? Wow.
No, perfect. I'm good.
Kayla, what movie is this next one that we will be discussing?
It is American Animals.
From 2018.
From 2018.
We're moving up in the years. All these are actually in chronological order. all three of these.
Wow. I was about to say, too, they're also all, like, crime movies. Like, each of them is centered around a crime.
So true.
Yeah. I was going to bring this up. I had a plan in my head hatched. I thought I was going to say all of them involve some manner of an external law enforcement organization. Like, they all do involve some manner of police, but, like one involves the FBI, one involves the whatever the, like, debt
the lawyers,
thing is.
Right? He's
I
a
can't
lawyer.
Remember what they're called. Yeah. Right.
The Department of Justice, the DOJ?
Yes, them.
Thank you. And then in American Animals, they have...
FBI is at the end.
I guess they
right?
also have
yeah.
the FBI.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's all they're like a looming presence kind of for all of these characters. Yeah, interesting. Definitely. And they all have fourth wall breaks. This one is more, I would say, the talking head stuff. And so it's interesting because like the I, Tonya was both. Yeah. And I think like now we'll kind of see what the other two are more when they're just in their own movie. What about Joe? Do you want to read this synopsis? Do you want to take a crack at this one?
Absolutely. I would love to. Okay. John James Audubon's Birds of America is on display in the Special Collections Library at Transylvania University, tempting four bored college students to exchange their unextraordinary lives for something right out of a movie. Will these amateur thieves pull off the heist of a lifetime, or will they reap the consequences of the survival of the fittest?
Isn't it good?
That's good.
And it's a nod to the Charles Darwin, because it's got the Darwin book, too.
Wow.
Wow. I was really proud of that one. I gotta say.
Oh, man. So many layers. This movie, I've wanted to see this for, again, also a while. It's like another one of those indie movies where you hear hype about it, you hear people talk about it, and then like it just kind of goes under the radar for you. And then... they're always hard to convince yourself to watch afterwards, I feel like. I don't know.
Well, it's funny because Hannah talked about this one in our triple feature with her because Barry is in this movie. And so that's when it was kind of more on my radar. Like, I had kind of known about it, but at that point when she talked about it, I was like, oh. And then it was like, oh, this is actually a film movie that, like, all kinds of film people... like, love and talk about. I guess I just was, like, not paying attention to films in, like, these couple of years, 2017, 2018.
Yeah, and I mean, 2018 has so many of, like, my favorites, but the marketing, it makes sense why you wouldn't have seen these, though, because the marketing for this movie was so unconventional. Like, they didn't have a poster, so they just talked to a bunch of, like, random poster artists. They were like, make this, we have a competition, whatever. So if you look online, just like American Animals poster, there's tons of ones where people have like painted them and stuff. On top of that, many of the trailers were done kind of like they were like doing like a mock Ocean's 8 thing. Mm-hmm. Like it was the exact same graphics as
Ocean's
8.
I remember seeing the trailer
for
this movie,
And they would be like kind of making it seem like it was a better movie, which I wouldn't say it is, but it definitely is, you know, it's definitely
right,
the
yeah.
same.
It's, I mean,
film,
and I think probably leaning more into the heist thing, because it's hard to market this as like, well, it's hard to market a movie that's about like disillusionment with the American dream, I guess. I don't know. Like heist is just an easier thing to just give people. And they're like, yeah I like heists.
yeah.
But yeah, so do you want to get a little bit into why you picked this one? What draws you to this movie in particular?
Yeah, my first semester of college, I was not going to a community college. I transferred out, and in that first pretty awful semester, because it was like the beginning of the pandemic, nobody really knew how to socialize in a pandemic at college. It was like really awful. I spent something like $20 on this movie without having seen it at all. Like, it was literally just the trailer that had sold me. And so this has always been a movie that like I have been like very fiercely in defense of. Nobody really like, I've never interacted with somebody who's like, this is a bad movie, but if that were to happen, this is the hill I die on. And it's definitely the most disturbing movie, well, unsettling movie that I would consider myself to be in enjoyment of. I mean, there's one scene, and I don't know if we'll talk about it, but there's one scene where it's like incredibly difficult to watch, and like I always skip it, but like even so, like I don't know. I
Yeah.
think
Yeah,
they
it's
did it
an
pretty well.
interesting tone. I mean, that this movie kind of sets, because it has to go through so many different styles. Like you said, it does have the heist element, and I mean, they use the needle drops. It's like, it feels like an Ocean's movie at some points. But then they have it turn into like a very like heavy drama at some points, and then sometimes like a thriller, or yeah. And so it's like they have to balance a lot of different ideas, and as well as it just
Just being like a pseudo documentary, because they do use the real
people that were involved in the heist in this movie as like throughout the movie they come in giving their perspective. Sometimes they're put into the movie as like they're just like watching the events happen with us. So it's a very ambitious film for what it could have been, which is like they could have just done a regular heist movie and not have included the more subtextual elements, but they wanted to, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I think that it's just kind of one of those things where like I feel like it could have been, if it was marketed the normal way, it could be the new like typical college film bro movie. Like it could have been like Reservoir Dogs. That's really the vibe. It's like young men, lots of unchecked testosterone with like kind of, I mean, it's not really a college backdrop, but like it's there. At one point we see like two of them in a class. But other than that, it's like pretty darn like just people like being independent for the first time.
I mean, I think it is
But
like
yeah.
it has that vibe. I don't know if it would ever have turned into like a film bro thing, because I think it's too aware of its own like the flaws in that for that,
Oh
like.
yeah. I should say film bro with a positive connotation.
Right,
We'll say
because yeah, because like they,
that.
I think they bring up the Reservoir Dogs references. I mean, in like the Tarantino stuff intentionally, because it's like a commentary on those movies and the people that like those movies. Not that like, I mean, Reservoir Dogs is my favorite Tarantino movie, but like I think there is that connotation with that and the kind of culture that those movies created and can create. And so like this movie could have been that, but then it kind of like they subverted that expectation, which is cool.
Yeah, I think what was
Yeah.
interesting is last night I watched Alfred Hitchcock's Rope, and
Ah, what a
then I
movie. What a
watched this
film.
one today. Yeah, quite a good film. But it was funny because both are like, you know, these preppy sort of white privileged college boys or ex-college boys who think they can get away with whatever they want, and they kind of just do things to feel like, to feel them and to just do them and be like, what does it feel like to kill someone and get away with it? Let's
You guys are
try.
cut out for me, but
What does it
maybe
feel like
I'll
to steal
rejoin.
this book? I don't know. It's so interesting that they're able to tap into that in this, because I think that's one of the most interesting elements, is these guys are obviously idiots. They have no idea what they're doing, but they think that they can do it because probably a lot of the privilege they've had in life, or because of a certain personality that they have, where they're like, we can get away with this, no problem, no biggie. Like, let's steal this book and sell it for millions of dollars and we'll be rich.
Yeah.
And they have no plan to launder the money either. Like, they'll just inexplicably get millions of dollars
Oh,
and,
so dumb.
like, okay.
I love heist films, and when I didn't know much about this film actually, and when I started it today, I texted Noah and I was like, oh no, this is an art heist film. Like, this is gonna pull me back in. I like art heist specifically is like my niche of heist films. And so when it started, I would consider myself a heist expert at this point. And
Okay. If
when
I ever
they,
need something, I'll call you.
yeah, call me. I got you. I'll pull off a heist with you. And so when they started and he's like starting to do these things and he's trying to find a fence and they're like, I don't know what's offense. Oh, I was like, oh no, we're going downhill already. Like, if they can't like even know what offense is, I was like, we're done.
They don't know
they're
what offense
done.
Is. Yeah.
They're gonna get caught. So just kind of funny. Yeah, the whole thing is a shit show. I think that's what makes it so interesting too. Mm-hmm. Is while you're watching them, you know it's gonna go badly just because of how, I don't know, unhinged and chaotic they are.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because this is not really like a full-on spoiler, but there are two quote-unquote like heist days that they have where they do it once and then they fail and they do it again. And both times at before like they get to the heist place, like the music is like blaring, the cuts are like really frantic, like it feels like they're really cool and they have it all figured out. And then once they get to the library, it's like
everything slows down to a halt and you like feel like how they have no idea what they're doing. Like, especially when he goes up both times to the, like the room and you see his face and it's like, oh, this guy is in way over his head. Like, and it's really, really interesting because like, it gets you in their heads a little bit where it's like, you can feel the adrenaline and like the, yeah, they could probably pull this off. It's just like a book. Like they could just get the book and then they get there and like, oh no, like this is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah,
when he throws up in the on the side of the road, that is, I mean, for me, that's when it really settled in. Like, because like when they're, I mean, the scene where they, shall we say, disable the librarian is so like, you don't want to watch, you don't want to look away, you just want to like for it to be over. And then when he throws up, it kind of feels like, okay, now like the rest of this movie, we're no longer just like a bunch of college boys joyriding. Yeah. Like, this is gone serious.
You can see it in their faces, you know, like they realize what they, what like,
now they've crossed the line,
what they're getting them or have got themselves into at this point, and like they can't go back. It's like almost like an immediate shift for the characters, where not like it's a coming of age moment in the traditional sense, but it kind of is a little bit, where like they realize like, oh, this was an awful idea.
I have three little facts about this movie. I forgot I was going to say them.
Oh, amazing. I love a good fact.
Fun fact time.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a scene, the scene where they go to New York, aka the only fun scene to watch. Yes. You know what I'm talking about? There's a part where Evan Peters makes out with this woman at this bar. And it's only for like 3 seconds of a shot. Mm-hmm. And the woman who was that day player, that like extra, she didn't know that that's what she had signed up for. Like, she got there on set that day and the director was like, would you feel comfortable like just kissing this guy once? And she was like, yeah, okay, like whatever. Like, I'm sure she was like paid more for it or something. I mean, who would say no? It's Evan Peters. And and then the director, Bart Layton, was like looking at a monitor or something, and then he turned around and they were rehearsing. They were like making out like fully, and he didn't like give them any notes or anything, and they just rolled the camera, and that is what ended up in the film.
Wow, love it.
Yeah. I have two more. There's a scene where Spencer is talking about like he's like getting interviewed for college, and there's like all this dust on either side of him. In the art department, just used plants that produce like spores, and they just like rubbed them together for a while, and then they just like rolled camera, and they only had like 30 seconds or something before they dispersed into the air. So that's not actually dust, that's just like little like spores from plants.
Oh wow.
I know. It's
that is wow. That's interesting actually.
As a creative cinematographer. And then the only other thing I had was there's a scene where Spencer is working at a grocery store and everything is like super vibrant, but also like really desaturated at the same time. It's trying to show like how bleak it is what they're doing while also like showing that they're like trying to have a good time with it. And it's, it just works on so many levels.
Yeah. I think it definitely captures that feeling of like, you're just doing something in college or like in that stage of your life. And like, you don't know why really. And especially like if those interviews are like, oh yeah, what really draws you to this art form? And he's just like, I don't know, I just started drawing. He says this to the audience, not to them, the interviewers. Like, I just started drawing and like, I just draw. But like, you can feel that sense of like no having no direction in life and like just feeling like you need something like a purpose, and that is what this like heist served for them. And I think it's interesting, his character is probably the one I'm most interested in when I'm watching Spencer, because I think he feels the most like the audience, where you do understand that feeling, but then you also feel like, I feel you're watching, like, I feel like they got the experience they needed. Like, they don't need to do it. They bonded. I think it's fine if you want to come up with potential heist ideas. I think that's a great bonding experience. Sounds really fun.
Yeah.
So I think if they just stopped like halfway through the movie, this would be a great, great example of just like a friend group, you know, just vibing. But then the second half of the movie happens.
Yeah.
But I think that's what he feels like. And you can feel like that maybe even before they do the heist, he has kind of found some more sense of peace with like where he is, but they're so far in it at that point, and it's like, man, that sucks.
Yeah.
I think the first heist could have worked better. Like the disguise.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't disguise themselves afterwards. That was a real bad call.
Also, like, surely old men aren't that distracting. Like, that's kind of a spoiler, but surely, like, I mean, it's in the trailer, so it's okay. But like, surely, like, people weren't actually just like, an old person? Oh my god. Like, that's a pretty standard thing.
Yeah, and like, Spencer said is like, old people are invisible, which is true, is that like, if an old person is in a library, you're not like, I don't know, you're not really thinking anything of it. And the fact that like, I think they show you that scene from their perspective well, of like where they think everybody is watching them and they think that like they're going to get caught and all this, but really it's their own like stress that's amplifying the situation from their perspective. And I think that's what happens in the second heist day too, where it's like their own like stress and their own being unprepared was what really failed them. And so that's really interesting, the way that was all like shot and stuff.
Yeah. No, I saw in your letterbox review that you said that you would not have gotten caught. Do you think that if you were the consultant on this one, the crime consultant, that you would have advised them in the right direction?
I would have, yes. Of course.
You would have been like, we need a disguise, guys. The old men office were the right way to go. I mean, the makeup looked pretty good. There was one where I was like, eh. But there was a few of them looked like pretty convincing.
Yeah, it's definitely good enough that, like, in passing, no one is taking really a second glance at it. I don't know. I think their heist really fell apart in the room. Like, I think there's got to be another added layer to it to, like, I mean, I'm all for heists that don't harm people as well. I'm a very, like, not that I perform heists, but I'm a very, like...
Kayla's just casually, like, yeah, no, the heists that I pull off, we leave everyone alive. And, you know, that's just how we do it.
I think there could have been some other distraction or play of the game that, like, clears the space without having her in there in a different way. I don't know what that would be. I'd have to, like, stake out the place and see what's going on. And
so you want stuff, more like gentleman thieves, less of the, like, brawny.
Yes, yeah.
Well, you know, they could have maybe created a distraction outside, maybe, like, figured out something that would get her to leave the room without, like, thinking about leaving this guy in there. I think they could have.
They could have seduced her. They could have gone in. That's
the old men. That would have been really fun.
There
yeah,
you go. They could, oh, and then it, like, had, like, his mustache fall off at the end of it, and they're all, like, scampering out of there with the book, and he's like, and then they just run away.
Yeah, because I think heists themselves are their own art form when done properly. So, like, if you're watching a true, like, heist expert, it's, like, the way they do it is art itself. And so something like this, it's, like, it's not art. They're just doing it to do
it. Yeah, that's like how earlier in the movie when they're planning it out and they're wearing the suits and he's got his hair slicked back, do you know what I'm talking? And they put the thing over the thing and then they're like super suave with it. And he picks out one book and he's like reading it. And that's what you mean? Like that?
Yes, okay. Yeah. All day, every day. That is how I want eyes to be.
That's how I do my, I mean,
Yeah, that's how I imagine my heists.
Yeah.
With specifically relating to like the fourth wall breaks and the documentary stuff, I think that's one thing that we should maybe talk about, because I think it definitely changes how the movie, how you've come out of the movie feeling, you know? Because I think if it had just ended with them going to jail, you would have maybe got the same themes. But I think them having them, seeing them later in life and like hearing their thoughts on it really changes a lot of the perspective, and it deepens a lot of the themes, especially how like you, it kind of comes into play with like the unreliable narrator thing, where it's like, did that he actually go to the, where is it, Austria, and meet with these people? And it's funny because like you're watching it thinking, yeah, why did I even think that like he actually went there and did all of these things? But you just believe it because you see it. So what do you guys think about like those elements and how they affect the movie?
Can you ask it again in a wait.
Well, just like the element of like having, how does it change it having them, like them in the movie?
I think, I mean, primarily what I was thinking was, you know, there's like this meme that went around, I think when the Queen biopic came out, where like it says like actor in biopic, the person in real life, and it's like the person in real life is like a great deal less attractive than the actor.
Yes.
And for this, it was just so jarring to see like the guy who the real Warren was like, oh, okay, yeah. And while that is like very, you know, it sounds superficial when you think about it, it's like, yeah, because like it's, we're seeing like people who are paid to be pretty, and then we see like the real cold, like actual kind of people, and then it just kind of settles in like, oh no, this was really devastating. Oh, and at the beginning, you were saying like, how does it affect the movie having the talking heads at the beginning when one of the guys' dads is crying? That was I think truly was when it locked it in for me of like, oh, I'm gonna sit through this whole thing.
Yeah, and I think it could, because a lot of the movie is about like, again, the unreliable narrator thing, or seeing things with like different lenses, and I think that can play into it too, where like this isn't an exact representation of how it went down. This is like in their heads, so they're obviously gonna not remember things as clearly as they actually happened. And that can be like, you know, they look a little different when they're younger. They don't remember exactly how they look. They might romanticize some of that stage of their lives. So I think it can work in that way too, where it's like, it really is their memory and not a one-to-one of like reality, which I think is a lot more interesting than if it was just like, this is what happened and they went to jail and don't do bad things. 'Cause yeah, I think it adds a lot more layers to it.
Yeah. I couldn't help thinking the whole time, like, from an editor's standpoint, I was like, okay, was this actually the part of the interview where they were talking about this thing? Or did they pull this reaction from, like, a different part of the interview and, like, cut it here for emotional effect? Yeah. I just kept, like, which kind of makes it more interesting in a way, because it's like, you do realize that while maybe the people are an unreliable narrator, maybe the movie itself is an unreliable narrator, because you're like, people did cut this the way they wanted to tell this story, and these people said the stuff the way they wanted to tell the story. So, like, it's so interesting.
Yeah. Well, there's a moment when, like, the interview, one of the guys that's being interviewed says something, and then the person in the movie says that exact same thing. So, I mean, that shows that the interviews were made before they shot the scenes and everything. But I think that also, like you said, it's like, this is how they told the story, and we're just watching their recreation of it. Yeah, I'd be really interested to see like how the writing process went for this, because they maybe had like a script, and then the interviews changed maybe some of it, how they decide to approach it. Really interesting, like, editing for sure.
Yeah, those interviews are real, by the way, completely. That's just the director and two other guys, and then the subject, I've listened to the director's commentary 5, 7 times, and
Oh,
I, you got to get your money's worth when you pay
Sure.
$20 on the iTunes store. And he talks about how like it was like such a like raw moment where they had told them what they're going to talk about ahead of time, which is just kind of basic documentary ethics. But like other than that, like it was just completely a raw little sit down. And yeah.
Yeah, and I really liked how it was all in like different locations that like maybe best represented them. Like especially how he was in his studio, and then when it at the end when they panned and it showed more of his artwork, that was really cool. Because I was like, wait, is he a construction worker, like a carpenter now? Like he changed
Right.
paths, but then it's cool how you see all the birds and like that is really interesting. Like I said, he's my favorite character because I think he has
Oh, easily.
the most to him in that way, and I think they know that too. Like they purposely gave him all of
Yeah.
that. Like they drag out his final text at the end, like because you're like, what did he do? So it's obviously like they're really leading you to like care about him the most.
How did you guys feel about the score? Was it noticeable for you?
I mean, I don't know if I really. I don't usually notice the score the first time I watch a movie unless it's
Okay.
really apparent. I noticed obviously the needle drops were very obvious. But
Like the soundtrack.
there was some of the
Yeah.
score where it was like a propulsive like beat, and I think it really did add to some of the tension, especially in the scene where it's towards the end. I don't and it's like they're getting maybe it's when they're getting arrested and it's like the tension keeps building and then it just cuts immediately. That was I
Yeah.
noticed that definitely, and I think it is a lot. It is underscore, but it is good under. It's like good underscore,
Yeah.
and that there's a difference because some underscore can feel like very cheap, but I think this underscore works very well.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right, should we move on?
Sure, let's do it.
All
Move
right.
on to
We should.
number
Yeah,
three. Yeah, that one is.
I
We've been
noticed the
talking about that one
time.
for a while, but it was good. It's a good
Okay.
movie. What is this last one here? This one is a little more unknown, so we're getting into
Yeah.
the indies here.
This is the most fun movie out of all of these by miles and miles. The first, I feel like the first two, like, I, Tonya will make you feel a deep depression. American Animals will make you feel upset. And Buffaloed will just make you feel angry and a little satisfied. And I think that's a good way to end it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think you don't want to end your audience on a downer. You want to give
Yeah.
them something that feels like there's hope in the end. And I think the ending of this
Yeah.
movie does have like that. It feels very like it wraps up the story in a nice way while still feeling like the character will have a life after this, which is good and nice.
And it's more of a call to action. It's less of a
Yeah.
this crappy thing happened.
Definitely, definitely. Kalo, do you want to read this one? Do you want to lead us
Sure.
out here?
Yeah. Peg Doll is a hustler with a knack for understanding finances. In an attempt to make money to pay for college, Peg ends up in jail after selling forged NFL tickets. When she gets released, she struggles to find work until she stumbles across a debt collection agency run by the kingpin of debt collectors himself. Will Peg be able to use her smarts to stand up against the collectors and her own mountain of bills? Or will she lose everything because of the bills?
Oh man.
Boy. Yeah.
I was on a roll with
You were.
these
You were.
tonight.
They, I think they increased in quality. The last two especially were very good.
Thank you.
I think with this movie, it's one of those where it's so specific that it just like makes you want to keep watching. Because like there's so many specific details that you can tell are like personal to the director and the writer. And it's like there's nothing else like it. Like it's such a there's it's there's so many like specific things that happen that it could only have been written by this one person, which I think is always really fun.
Yeah. Well, should we do first impressions? I guess we
Sure.
should.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved this. I feel like it's just like I have loved this since I first saw it, and it's just like such a nice little it's like What's the movie? The Big Short on a smaller, more local scale. And it's done in a way that is like very, it's less of like, I mean, this is coming from one of them, but it's less of a white man, white straight man who's like, like kind of gaming the system and more of just like a Robin Hood type figure. 'Cause like in when like I love The Big Short and I love movies like that, but they're really the like wealth redistribution is really incomplete because like it's not like it's the somebody robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. It's someone taking money from the rich and giving it to
Yeah,
themselves
right,
and not
definitely.
really giving it back to the
Yeah.
poor. 'Cause like when they like take from the housing market and all these big banks, it's not like the people who the banks wronged are like benefiting from it at all. And I don't know. I just really like this because of
Yeah,
that.
I mean, I think it's like if it had stayed, if this was like a movie like The Big Short, like if Adam McKay was making this movie, it would have stayed at the first place. Because I think that place is like basically what like a Wolf of Wall Street kind of thing, and it would have maybe followed that guy, and it would have been obviously they're not saying he's like a great guy. It's more of like a cautionary tale kind of thing.
Oh
But in
yeah.
this one,
Like
we
Vice.
take a different perspective, which is like she doesn't want. She's like she obviously is pretty self-centered, especially in the beginning, but she's more a lot more like I think the audience and.
And a lot more
Doesn't
likable.
want to be like robbing this old lady like a million times and just kind of wants to have a good life and live up to what she thinks like her dad's expectations were, I guess.
She just wanted to go to college.
Yeah, she did.
She was in the same boat as all of us. She wanted the money to go to college.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? Yeah, I really do like also the NFL ticket scene. That's really funny. And it has like that light tone where like it is very serious in some points, but it always like manages to lighten the tone because you have again like you have the climax where she kind of exposes everyone. And that is very intense because you're like, are they going to find out? They found the camera. Oh my word. But then they like see the Bills game and the Bills win, like, oh yeah. And it's like, it really grounds it in reality in that way, where it's like life obviously has really moments that are like really intense and serious, but there's also moments where it's like, oh, but the Bills are gonna win. So let's just drop everything for a second and then we'll get back to arresting you guys. Yeah, I really like those elements.
Yeah, this movie is definitely the candy. It's definitely the dessert of the trio. It's like so much more. Like this is something I would file under like enjoyable to watch. Like if I've had like a bad day, I'm not gonna watch American Animals. Like it's not comfortable at all. This is like they win at the
Yeah.
end and it's just
Yeah, and
good.
the brother for Noah Reed from Schitt's Creek, he's great. He's awesome.
Love him. And
And
he's a great character in this too,
he
which
was.
also is like great.
He was a great character. And the lawyer, I forget his name, but he was in Coming to America, the sequel. And I really liked him in that movie, but I didn't like that movie. So I was glad to see him in this, where it was a good movie and he was still good. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting performances in this. I think it's cool because at first, I was kind of annoyed by the main character, like because it's like she's very like herself. And it's like as the movie goes, you learn to like her more, I think. And I don't know. It's like a lot of main characters, I think, maybe are sanitized for the audience. But in this one, it just presents who she is, and she's a very specific caricature that I haven't really seen in a movie, like this specific kind of character. And I really liked seeing that because you can get kind of tired of seeing the same characters in every movie. And she, I've never seen a character that is quite like her since, so I really like that.
Yeah, I think it helped once they had that old lady scene where she was like, wait, you've scammed her before. 'Cause then you can kind of see her ethical boundaries. Because at first you're like, okay, she's a con artist. she's doing all these things, maybe for better reasons than most people. But, like, at that point, when it flips, you're like, oh, okay, so she does have a moral boundary where she's not just doing it to gain profits like these other people are. Like, she wants there to be some level of it being ethical. She obviously, maybe this isn't as ethical as doing other things, but it's cool that they do that so that, at that point you can kind of be like, maybe I do want to cheer for her a little bit.
Yeah. I like that it's not like it's not just like a person who learned their lesson. Like, there's an actual, like, you can actually root for somebody. Yeah. And that's what I love that.
Yeah, definitely.
Noah, you mentioned The Wolf of Wall Street. Did you see that one of the top reviews on this movie on Letterboxd is Leonardo DiCaprio retire pitch?
That's so funny.
I think that's
It is, like, you do feel that influence, though, in some of those scenes, especially with the pacing and, like, the editing of, like, her settling all these debts and, like, rising to the top. And I do like those seeing those influences along with maybe the more, like, the family element, I think, is something that is different from those movies. And so you get a little bit of both there. With, like, the fourth wall breaks, I think this one is interesting because it does... It's mostly in the narration is where a lot of it happens because she's basically just addressing the audience the whole time. But there is one where she explains how debt collection works, like what debt collection is and who debt collectors are. Mm-hmm. And it transitions to, like, she's giving, like, a PowerPoint to the audience. And that is in that moment, it is a very traditional, like, Ferris Bueller fourth wall break. But then at the end, you realize, like, oh, this was just a scene from the ending where she's giving a PowerPoint to all these other people. So it's really, like, it wasn't a fourth wall break. It just, like, was taking that scene and bringing it here. So I think that thought that was really interesting because it, like, flipped that your idea of what that scene was on its head. Like, they just took that from the end and kind of, like, brought it forward. And I guess the whole movie was basically just her telling the story to those group of people. So, yeah, I thought that was cool and a cool way to, like, tell the story in an interesting way.
That scene that you're talking about is definitely, like, why people think of it. They think Adam McKay, like, it checks the box as soon as she hit goes like this with the, like, pointer. It's like, now we're in The Big Short again. It feels like, but it's not. It's its own thing. It's like The Big Short, but fun. Big Short, but make it fun. Yeah.
And I mean, like, I think his movies, as he's gone, he's taken himself a lot more seriously, as we've seen, and some people like that, some people don't.
Yeah.
But this movie, like, it, I think it does have a message and, like, a moral, like, theme behind it that they really wanted to tell, but it also, like, is fun, and it doesn't take itself so seriously that you're going to lose the message or, like, just check out of it because it feels pretentious. Because I think a lot of fourth wall breaks can feel pretentious when overdone or done in a certain way, but this doesn't. It kind of just skirts the line of, like, nope, this is still fun and just, like, a cool idea.
Yeah, I think the runtime helps with that too. Because I think if it was, like, much longer than it is, then it would exhaust kind of its style and exhaust what it's doing. Because I think if this even was, like, 30 minutes longer or 20 minutes longer, it'd be like, all right, I think I'm tapping out here on some of this. But I think the way that it's so, like, fast-paced anyway, and she's so chaotic, like, it helps that it's shorter and kind of just bounces through each part of the story. Yeah, I think it's really fun in that way. Yeah. Like, it just has a lot of fun little sequences that got tied together, and a lot of really fun, like, supporting characters too, like the different people she kind of gets together for her own.
Yeah, like the evangelist. I love the evangelist. He's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, he's hilarious. Yeah, they're all in the girls she meets in prison. I thought that was funny. And that little scene in the prison was funny too, where she was like, oh, I'm going to do this and this and this. And she was just like, all right, my bad, you're a turf. and moves on, but then brings her back. So that it just has a lot of funny little moments and character to it that I think is what really makes this film a special little indie film, is because it has those kind of more unique things that it did that didn't try to be something else. It just was like, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to like it, and it's going to be awesome. And that's what it did.
Yeah. Did you guys notice the accents at all being kind of wonky? Because the accents are like Midwest mm-hmm. accents, but then also they do the Boston thing with the like car.
Yeah. And like it was like, park. I mean, I am not familiar with like a Buffalo accent, so I was just like, I just guess that's probably what it is. But it was like, definitely what stuck out to me first is like how integrated the accents were for all of the characters. Like it was a part of their character, each of their accents. Mm. And it was all, each of them was a little different too. Like hers was very obvious. And then I think Judy Greer's was like a little more muted. So it was interesting and gave all their characters like their own personality, like how much of the accent they actually had.
Yeah.
I wonder how people from Buffalo feel about this movie.
I mean, it's like small, it so maybe not. I don't know if everyone's seen it, but I would be interested because, like, is it a represent?
I mean, I know they shot part of it there, so.
I assume like the writer and maybe the director are both from Buffalo. Like, I don't think you could write this movie without having been from Buffalo, because like it's again so specific to that area.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I would be interested to ask a person that lives in Buffalo what they think of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's like people in Minnesota, like we don't like Fargo.
Mm.
Like if you bring up Fargo around someone from Minnesota, we're like, yeah, we don't talk like that. No, like,
yeah, that those accents are so thick in that movie. It's so
God,
wild.
Yeah, and it's kind of absurd. And yeah, and I think it's like, I wonder if they like it or if they don't like it in Buffalo.
Mm. Yeah,
I don't think there's any movies like that from where I am.
I think all the movies set in Virginia are probably about racists, is what my guess would be.
Probably,
so, yeah.
Some of them.
Yeah, anyway, I think this movie is, I would definitely recommend it. It's on Hulu, and like you said, Kayla, it's like a really great runtime. I love a nice 90-ish minute movie. And it has like a lot of different elements to it, where it's not just like, kind of like you were saying, I guess, about movies you like, where maybe it's not going to make you cry, but it does have like the comedic element, but there is also like that subtext to it, the social commentary element.
Yeah.
So you can get a lot out of it in that little short amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, I love movies that break the fourth wall. I think it's such a bold and cool way to go. Like, I don't like it when they're like, when the movies are like, fuck you, like to your face, and it's like, okay, like Deadpool, and it's like, I don't need right now. Like, I just want to have a good time.
I could do a whole podcast on Deadpool. Like, man, that movie is that movie has ruined movies, I think, in some ways.
There's a lot of, like, I don't know. I think movies like that has gotten a lot of people walking away from from the concept of, like, breaking the fourth wall as, like, kind of a negative thing, like, a way to really, like, get your audience like kind of riled up, and it's like a very like the real Eric Andre crowd, you know what I mean, like that kind of thing. I don't know, I think that these movies do like a way better job.
No, I agree. Yeah, and I think I do think that breaking the fourth wall a lot of times can be like a cop-out for like just trying to like seem cool, or that's why I think Deadpool is annoying a lot of times. Because like there's not really a narrative reason for it to happen, or a story reason, or like a character reason. It's just like they wanted to do it because it is something that they can do. But I think all three of these movies use it in a way that impacts the narrative in like a very specific way. And like if they weren't in the movie, they would all be like very different. And
They feel like very specific creative choices by the director.
Yeah,
like whether or not certain ones work or don't work, you can at least watch them and be like, the director meant for this to be a specific asset of their storytelling in this, which I can definitely appreciate.
Yeah,
yeah. I think, I mean, We talked about The Wolf of Wall Street. I don't know. I mean, I've only seen this one part, so maybe there's more of them than just this. But I know that there's a part where Leonardo DiCaprio kind of looks at the camera and says, like, this is all too complicated for you to understand. But everything that we're doing here is illegal or
Yeah.
something. I don't,
Yeah,
it's
Scorsese
something
breaks
like,
the fourth
okay.
wall sometimes, like Goodfellas he does. So, yeah, he likes to do that.
Right. And in that way, it's like, it's not like, I don't know. I think that treating your audience like they can understand the thing, like in Buffaloed, where she kind of breaks it down, is so much more effective because then you actually like have a dog in the game. You're like actually like concerned. But yeah.
Right, yeah. And sometimes, you know, I would have not have known anything that was going on in Buffalo if she hadn't done that. So I was very appreciative of her explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think fourth wall breaks are a really interesting topic. And for that reason, I think our question of the week should be, what is your favorite movie that breaks the fourth wall? So it can be one of these. That's fine. But it also can be a lot of other movies break the fourth wall. So. You know, I don't know what your favorite one is. Maybe it is Ferris Bueller.
Oh, for me?
Well, I was just saying
Oh.
in general to the audience.
Oh
But
yeah.
I mean, is
Yeah,
yours one
yeah,
of these or?
yeah. Yeah, I think mine is definitely American Animals,
Yeah.
but that's not that doesn't shock anybody.
Yeah, I would have to think because like it is such a specific thing, but I don't like there's some movies that might only do it once and I'm just like forgetting. So like I'd have to like really think about it and like think like what.
It's a hard thing to categorize, like what movies have broken the fourth wall, because you don't file them all under the same thing in your brain.
I'm currently looking at letterbox lists because I was like, I know I have a couple in my brain, but I'm not like totally, you know,
I
whatever.
searched what movies break the fourth wall on Google, and the only two that came were Deadpool and The Big Short. So this just fell.
Aha. Those are the only two ones that do it,
Yeah,
I think.
I'm
No other
seeing
fourth movies have ever done it.
Emperor's New Groove and Kronk's New Groove.
Oh,
I think
wow.
those are God tier fourth wall break movies.
Never seen them, but I do I yeah, I
That is
know.
so
I
good. Those are great.
know that I have like literally just like Anastasia and like one other like animated movie or it's like that 2D animation is what I remember from my
Yeah,
childhood. I
Anastasia's
really
great.
yeah, those are like the only two that I can like think like ah, I was here and doing that when I saw that.
Fight Club breaks the fourth wall. So that does. And also, Amelie breaks the fourth wall. So.
Oh yes, it does. Yeah. Oh, that would have been a good one for this too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that one is another one where like it definitely serves the story very well that she does. Yeah.
Teen Beach Movie
Oh,
is
my
apparently
favorite.
fourth wall break.
Oh, Zombies 1 and Zombies 2 also break the fourth
Oh
wall
man.
multiple times. I just watched those.
Does Descendants break the fourth wall too?
No, Descendants does not break the fourth wall.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah, it don't. I don't blame you. But yeah, zombie. I noticed that when I watched those with my sisters. I was like, wow, they're breaking the fourth wall this whole movie. Yeah, they do literally like every scene. They're like just talking to the camera. It's so weird. But yeah, let us know what your favorite movie is that breaks the fourth wall. You can answer that on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, on Spotify. You know, there's so many ways to let us know your answer to this question, and then we'll read them at the beginning of our next episode. We're going to be doing an episode about just what we've watched so far this year. So just getting into all of the movies. I've watched a few new ones. You know, we'll probably talk about The Northman. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, I also recently watched, so I can talk about that. But yeah, we have a lot of different things we can maybe get into.
Yep. And then Joe, do you want to replug kind of like where people can find you? Maybe if you
Yeah.
want to reveal your social media so people can follow you or watch your
Yeah.
videos.
On Twitter, I'm at Joe M. Miller, and that's like the only one I use. And then from there, you can find like my YouTube, and I have pinned all my like documentary stuff. I have a new thing coming out pretty soon about a man who puts phones on highway walls. And it's yeah, I know. But it's Yeah, I'm excited for
I
people
mean,
to
it
see
sounds
it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
I don't
cool.
know anyone
yeah.
who puts a phone on a highway wall.
It's a hard thing to picture. Whenever I describe it, people are like, oh, yeah, I don't think I've seen that before. And I'm like, you wouldn't have.
Because, yeah, right. Yeah, that's well, that sounds yeah. fun. Definitely check out his channel, and then like you can subscribe, and then hit the notification bell, and then you'll know the next time a new video drops.
Guys, get on the Patreon. $7 a month. You get to know my current whereabouts at all times.
I'll share my Snapchat location.
Like oh, man.
I will connect you on the Find My Friends app if you pay me $7 a month.
That would be such a funny Patreon.
Then track me at all times.
Reward. Wow. Yeah. So we'll link all those in the show notes so you can all check them out. Awesome. Yeah, I don't know if I have anything else though.
Wow.
Well, thanks for having
yeah,
me on.
Thank you for being
thanks
on.
Thanks for coming on.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla.
I'm Joe.
And we're
secondhand film critics.